then you have to listen to your heart or to your guts in some way. It's your intuition that would tell you. And at that time, your intuition knows better than your reason. Your reason will always try to take you to something which looks rational, but in fact will be the good reason not to do it.
Welcome to We All Make Mistakes, the podcast that finds value in what everyone else is trying to avoid, getting it wrong, or as Barack Obama once put it, screwing it up. My mission is to challenge what it means to be successful and to show you that people at the top of their game have not always made perfect choices. That's reassuring, right? My name is Ben Voyer, and I'm a professor of entrepreneurship at ESCP Business School and a behavioral scientist. My job is to understand and change people's behavior to make them better at what they do. But we're not here to talk about me, hey? My guest today on We All Make Mistakes is Cyril Vigneron, the CEO and president of Cartier. He's a leader known for his vision, sensitivity, and for bringing Cartier back to its legendary heritage. But he's also someone known for being remarkably deep in his intellectual approach to luxury and his own leadership. As a social media influencer, I encourage you to follow him on LinkedIn. He offers and shares his wisdom about society, and his insight go much further than talking about the luxury industry. In an ever-changing environment, he stands for Cartier's core values, timelessness and durability. When others choose to follow the latest fads and overproduce, he sticks to classics. According to him, moving forward doesn't mean changing everything or betraying one's identity. And if there is one mistake Cyril did not make, it is to study at ESCP Business School. The school is proud to count him as an alumnus. Cyril Vigneron, hello and welcome to We All Make Mistakes.
Hello, Ben, and thank you for having me here.
Thank you very much. Today, you're CEO and president of Cartier, and you started your career in a completely different industry. Was that a mistake?
Well, the question about career and career development and how it goes can be seen as a plan and as a kind of a well-designed plan that you can have from your childhood and you want to achieve. And then you may think at some point you have taken the wrong path. But there are also elements where you discover yourself in the journey. So in some way you do things and then you change paths and it may be seen as a mistake or not. And in that... In fact, what happened is what comes at the end. So when I was a child, I had many different kind of interests, but there was one, I wanted to become an architect. The other, I wanted to become a musician. And for both elements, my parents, the teacher, the family discouraged me to do so. Then my teacher for music said, if you want to be a professional, probably you can, but you'll probably do a few concerts and then become a teacher because the world of music is very, very harsh. And especially guitar is not really on the mainstream, especially classical guitar. So I said, I will keep that for hobby and I will do something which is serious. And after school, I started to go to my national duty when I went to Djibouti and when I was on the National Service for Water Supply. And I had a great experience, a great human experience. I didn't learn anything about business, but I learned a lot about human beings. Came back and went to Compagnie Générale d'Électricité when I did some consulting and basically on something which were very, very serious. I was called by an old colleague to go to Cartier. I was working on the organization and IT department. I'm not a tech guy, but it was working on internal process and it was fine. But there was no engineer. And people were more from commercial, marketing, creativity. So three teams in 3 years, the head was asked to leave. And I said, do you want the job? And I said, no. And no one could be found. So my boss came in, are you sure you don't want to say yes? Then I thought of it and say, anyway, I wanted to leave. So there is nothing to lose. So I will say, okay. And all my friends say, this is the worst mistake you can do in your career. I say, why? I say, if it works, you stay there forever. If it doesn't work, you're fired like others. And then how will be your career readable? I say, I was about to leave. So time will tell if it's a mistake or not. But I think I know what was missing in terms of building bridges and what I can bring. So by saying yes to a job that no one wanted and everyone said it was a mistake, it happened to be a good choice.
Mm-hmm. And in a way, by saying yes to a job that you didn't think you wanted because you wanted to leave the company, but you still fell back on your foot.
And then the things came in my career like that. So 6 years later, I had worked it out quite well, stabilized this part, bring it to another level. And my boss say, well, it's time to look for the next job. I propose you Japan. Do you want to go? I say, why not? But being the head of Japan and coming from internal process organization, having seen no product and no client, and with a mission to double the turnover, was a kind of one-way ticket. It was really a risk taken by the president at that time to take me there, where all those who were trade marketer wanting that job. And he said, and I said, why do you ask me? Because I'm the only one who have no experience in this thing. So if it was a mistake, they would not leave it for long. That's why it was a one-way ticket. So I'm doing more architecture now by having given it up. And now I'm working with programs linked to music, and I can meet the world best artists, whether film directors or musicians or so forth, that if I had done my own passion, I wouldn't have done it. So what happened to be something to give up, in fact, turned to be something that was given to me later in a much better way. So we don't know what life comes. But the thing is that there is some choice to make where you don't know. A plan A with no plan B, and you don't know if it's a mistake before you have done it. And same when I left Cartier 25 years later, because I thought I had done what I had to do. There was no point in hanging on a position. I was having some strategic difference with my CEO. So I have to go. And went to another group, LVMH, mm-hmm. and my colleagues say, you know, you're more than 50. It's another one-way ticket. To my surprise, after going there and 2 years and a half doing well, I was called back. They said, do you want to come back to Cartier? I said, no, I'm done. I said, do you want to come back and be the president? They say, okay. And I said, yes. And again, it was a one-way ticket, because if it doesn't work, what goes next? If you go to two of the major group in the sector and one you have left, and if you don't, if you come back and the other one doesn't, that would probably not take you back. And again, there is no safety net. Mm. And so you don't know if it's a mistake until it's done.
And about regrets, how about being a musician? Is that something that you feel is better as a hobby? Or do you have any regrets of some sorts of...
No, I have no regret. Mm-hmm. Because in some way I have become or have I become. Mm-hmm. In some way, I could explore some part of our music in a way where there was no pressure. I didn't have to live from it. For instance, if I had done things differently, maybe I would not have gone to Japan. I would not have met my wife. Mm. And if we had not met, we would not have the beautiful children we have. Mm.
The literature in psychology suggests that for the most difficult decisions in your life, you should actually not overthink it. And basically, the rationale behind that is that there are so many dimensions in complex decision that your mind will not be able to actually calculate and reconcile all the possible dimensions. And so you're much better off just going and deciding without overthinking it.
Oh, I would say there are two kind of decision, which in some way comes to many of those we think, in fact, are not real decision. If there is a clear rationale for making one choice and you analyze that in detail and say it's a no-brainer, then you just do it. But it's not a decision. Then the two other kind of decisions which are different is the one where you say there is no right and wrong and you can't know in advance. If your understanding is clear because it's either complex or so many factors can interact, then you have to listen to your heart. Or to your guts, as in some way. It's your intuition that would tell you. And at that time, your intuition knows better than your reason. Your reason will always try to take you to something which looks rational, but in fact will be the good reason not to do it. Mm. And the third part of decision, which are a bit similar but a bit different, is when you say you have to go to a collective decision to build a future together. And then it depends on the common will to do it. So you must have then your own conviction, but you must be able to get allies with you to go through there. You will never do that alone. It's like, you know, in a city, you want to build a brighter city future. You have to do that collectively.
Mm. And I'd like now to talk a bit about one of the things that's been striking to me ever since we met, which is you have a leadership style that is very authentic, very inclusive, especially when we think about the typical CEO and president leadership style as stereotyped in the media.
I would say I'm a in-between planner, meaning something have to be planned.
Mm-hmm.
And have to be planned on the short term, or something have to be planned on the midterm, and they must be planned. Meaning you evaluate your capacity, your production capacity, and you need bigger capacity, you have to build them. And it takes time. We are currently on the way to build or to rebuild a factory in Italy. We had acquired it, but the plant is saturated and we're growing so much that we need more space. So we have to rebuild the plant. And we want to make it totally environment friendly. And we want to make it LEED Platinum, carbon negative, which is something new construction method. So you need a lot of research, a lot of design to make it happen. It just cannot happen just like this. You cannot improvise. So these need to be planned. There have been some kind of stereotypes, as you said, about how to define authority, how to be distant, how to be a kind of ivory tower. But this is, I think, is over. There is a need for incarnation again. People want to know who is making decision for what reason, and what do you stand for, and what are your conviction. So the more you go to transformation or take risk, the more you have to incarnate that and say, I'm doing that for those reasons, and I'm ready to stand for it, and I'm ready to be accountable for it.
And what's been the hardest so far in getting where you've been? What's been the greatest challenge you've faced in becoming who you are today?
When I came back to Cartier, knowing that there was some part which of the strategy which was previously held had turned to be true at up to a certain point and less, and no one wanted to see them. So at the moment when things are going not well and you say you have to stop, you have to take distance and you have to think, then people think, but we have to put things in motion. We have to act. There is an emergency in there. I say no, because the emergency is not something like a short-term event you have to really react. It's not like an earthquake. It's a strategy. A strategic thinking needs to step back and think. So I had to convince my team to think slower.
And what's interesting is, first of all, you're really talking about being with the team and convincing them. So you're not adopting a posture of saying, I'm your new leader and this is where we're going to go. You're really inclusive. But how do you do that? How do you take your team without blaming it on others? Or is it part of the, I would say, game to kind of say, well, you know, the person before me did, you know, made mistakes and I'm going to do something different?
Well, in this case, I had been part of it before. I was part of this for 25 years and so I was into it. So I didn't say you made mistake, but say, if we look at what we design, and that's a part of strategic thinking, say, that's what we have done, that's what we were thinking, that's what we would try to do. So if you just look at that and say, it has failed. So it was not something we say, you did wrong or my predecessor did something wrong, but say, we went through, for those reasons, didn't work. We have to understand why. We have to understand where did it deviate and which were the assumptions or the basic, I think, subconscious ideas or convictions that were driving us that were wrong. What was wrong? What are the kind of beliefs that we had that have been driving us and have not proven to be right? So this is just an exercise of clarity. So at that time, coming to the team was very passive but negative. So I worked more with the periphery. I went more to work on the manufacturers. I went more to see all the markets and see what is the reality you see. And then I talked to them in full transparency and clarity. Say, oh my God, at least someone is listening to us. Mm. And at some point, you have to put the entire company into it. The central team, the close one, and then all those who have a key role in management, whether they are close or far on key markets or on the logistics, supply, manufacturing. That's where also I started to say we have to work for transparency. There were some moments where manufacturing work had gone to restructuring. So the team say, no, we will protect you, so do not have to come now. Say, on the contrary, I have to come now. Mm. And I went there and said, you know, the team might be aggressive with you. I say, I'm not aggressive. I want to listen. And I felt them tensed and I felt them unhappy. But if for the first time, say, someone is coming to talk to us. Some say we have not seen any president for the past 5 years. No one came to see us ever. When I went to Thailand, there was just a team of small, were 10 in the office, say, why did you come all the way? I say, because everyone matters. Mm. And these things in proximity make a big difference, that all the things went up. Everything came and everything came to my ears. Sometimes it was kind of just menial matters, but then gradually things came to really key question people wanted to hear. Mm. The awful comment was say, no, but don't share the strategy with everyone. I say, why? Because either it's too complicated for people to understand, or it's too strategic, so confidential, because if you share it, then everyone will know. They say, I think it's wrong. The former strategy failed. And so if we don't change, it will not work. But if we don't say we're changing anything, no one will know. So, and because it failed, no one is chasing us, because no one is fearing us, because it doesn't work. Mm. So we have first to say, to trust people, and to say we will share the new strategy and we'll deliver it.
How do you create psychological safety in your teams and in the workplace?
So the first part is to create it globally. I say that when we have this occasion, these town halls, whether it's physical or so forth, everyone should know that every question can be asked and every question will be answered. And there was also this discipline that even there were kind of 100 questions, you could only address like 40. I replied to all of them in writing after the meeting. I've always replied to them all. So this was the first part. And then things could be organized or not by the team. But everyone thought, and they can send directly to the internal communication team that reports directly to me if they want to ask something without having the management knowing it. And at the beginning, the first was to put it anonymously. And then gradually things can come to be open face and say, that's that person who asked that question. And then ask the person to stand up and to ask also physically, which also gave a lot of confidence. But first you have to say it's anonymous, and then you say everything's answered with goodwill. And then the safety space come. Of course, in human communities are what they are. And there are always moments where there are some tensions. There are always some who don't feel comfortable to pick up. So you constantly have for all these things in all management team to say, let's try to bring more transparency. Let's try to open up. Let's try to find what are the hard things that people cannot tell. I think it's a constant construction to define how much transparency we can bring in an organization, how much trust, how much has to be left to privacy, how much has to be left also to this part of implicit, indirect, and respecting others' feeling when there are things they just don't want to tell. But if at some point something hard, it's kind of been a pain point and preventing from moving on, then at some point you have to crack it down and you have to bring the thing on the table that you can solve the issue.
And how do you, talking about issues, how do you manage mistakes in the workplace? Mistakes that you may make yourself or mistakes that you feel someone in the team has made. How do you manage that?
So the principle I've tried to bring, and it's always an ongoing route, was to say small mistakes you just forget. And there are some mistakes you make, you forget. You don't try to blame someone. You just forget. The other part is, say, the middle one you have to solve and you have to learn from. And often we spend too much time trying to find who has done what compared to finding a solution. So the attitude should be recognize the mistake and try to solve it. Don't hide it and try to solve and learn from it. So that's where, you know, Nelson Mandela has a beautiful quote. He said, I never lose. I either win or I learn. Mm. And that's a fantastic attitude to think. So try to put that and say everyone can make mistakes. And it happens all the time. Or we do things in goodwill and we happen to have a bad result. So it happened to be the choice we made happens to become a mistake. We have to solve it. We have to fix it. We have to find a way out. Then there are the bigger one we should avoid. If it's something, a strategic mistake that put everything in danger, then you have to take responsibility for it. And you cannot say, oh, it was a mistake, I will do something else. How can you be followed like that? Mm. So that's the part. Small one, you forget. Middle one, you learn. big one, you avoid, very big one, you resign. And when you put that, it becomes also a safe place of a room for exploration, a room from taking risk of doing things. And if you at some point say it's a risk worth taking, you do it and you learn from it.
How do you learn from things? Do you have a recipe or advice on how to learn from mistakes?
No, because each case can be different. You know, you can learn from a process. You say, I've done the process this way and I face difficulties at that stage. So something should be anticipated better. You say, I overlooked some of the conditions. Or other parties say, in fact, I can see some patterns that we do the same mistakes over and over again. So next time I will understand the pattern and I will do it differently. And for instance, the more you come to position of leadership, the more you kind of drive around you something that is fit to you. So at some point, you don't realize you make mistake. People are covering up in some way, or meaning trying to tell you what you want to hear.
How do you make sure that you get an unfiltered, like a mirror that is not too flattering for what the reality should be?
That's the point, to keep curiosity and to keep kind of sensors close to the ground. So that's why things like the Gen Z Observatory is so important. And so when you come and you gather people, they have no vested interest in telling you something you don't want to hear, and they tell you exactly what they want to say. And you listen to what they say. So the more you go to that, to go to around you for those who have no, who are not, let's say, biased by the environment you have created. Also, you have to understand that when there are oppositions, you have to listen to them. There was a moment where when the strategy was started to be kind of well understood, for instance, one of my team members said, oh, you know, there is still a problem, about 30% are not convinced yet. And I said, that's fantastic. If we have 70% who are convinced on that, then they can put things in motion. The 30% who are not convinced are challenging the ideas, are putting questions on the table. And these questions are useful to really challenge our own way of thinking. If everyone is kind of convinced or doesn't dare to say it for any reason, then we become in trouble because we have no way to know what is wrong in our thinking.
I'm now going to switch to a part of the podcast that we all really like, which is called the post questionnaire. My first question is, what's a mistake you keep on making, but you hope one day you won't?
Answering these kind of questions.
That's a good one. What's a piece of advice you've received that you wish you hadn't followed?
None of them, because the advice I wish I hadn't followed, probably I didn't follow and I don't know now. And the advice I remember are those I followed and they were all useful.
Mm. What mistake are you the most forgiving about with others?
Those done with goodwill.
Do you still make mistakes?
Of course.
Yeah?
Every day.
Every day.
From a small one to a big one, the small one being that I always cut the potato chips pack in the wrong way, and my family just mad at me because I do that over and over again. Say, Papa, we will never learn. So the small ones. Others are how I can do things in the way to address new ways of doing things, and sometimes getting too much passion on it, and so maybe making some mistakes over and over again. But I guess it's probably a part which at the end are not mistakes, because this part of exploring the unknown imposes that you get excitement of doing things, and some of them will not work. But if you filter too much, then you will filter also some that should stay at the end.
Is there anything in your life, in your career, that you didn't do because you thought it would be a mistake, but you then regretted not doing it?
Well, as we had said before, I give up some part and then wondering if it was not mistake. But I know now it was not mistakes, because in some way I could, in some way, enjoy them, like architecture or music, probably better than if I had chosen this one. So at some point I was wondering if it's not mistake. It's later that I found that, in fact, it was meant to be this way.
Mm. What is a mistake you've made that you will never forget?
I've already forgotten.
Good. Would you say it's a healthy thing to forget about your mistakes?
You have to learn from them and then you have to forget. Of course, if they're one that can be really big one and that have hurt yourself a lot, probably you should never forget about this one. But I think it's not good to keep too much the memory of mistakes and to move on at the end. So there are things that in some way are things that are kept in your heart, even at the end, doesn't really matter.
What's a mistake we make about other people's cultures?
There are several mistakes we make. First one is we ignore or we project ourselves on themselves and we try to interpret their view with our own set of values or standard. And that makes the way for total misunderstanding. We have to deprogram ourselves with our values when we come to other culture and to try to understand how people think on the other side. And then there can be anyway some part when we think that are universal values that we can anyway defend anyway. So there are some, and we have difficulties to make this part. Are there things we consider as applicable to everywhere? What means respect? But the mistake often is when we impose our views or we have only one set of things that we think is the only way to read the world. To give a very simple example, and Japan for that is a fantastic school because you have to decode everything and you have to reprogram anything. But just the perception of time or perception of self compared to collective is absolutely opposite. And if you don't change this thing, then you can't understand anything. So everything becomes ununderstandable. And as the culture is indirect and implicit, people tend to think, you know, people are just like that, they smile. And in fact, you just don't know what they mean. It's just indirect. It's just they don't want to say that publicly and not to face you directly. It's okay. As far as we know the route and we understand how it works, it works. We should not interpret more than that.
Cyril Vigneron, thank you very much
for
being
Ben.
Our guest today. It was a pleasure. And I really encourage our listeners to follow you on LinkedIn, because if you've enjoyed our discussion today, there's plenty more happening on social media. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to We All Make Mistakes, the podcast that finds value in what everyone else is trying to avoid, getting it wrong. With me, Ben Voyer, a professor of entrepreneurship at ESCP Business School. In our conversation with Cyril today, we've learned some very important points and advice. The first one, never to have regrets. Then, it's important to forget about your small mistakes, but always aim to learn about the bigger ones. And when it comes to making career choices, you're much better off with binary choices, such as, should I do this or not, rather than surround you with tons of possibilities. And the last one, don't overthink. Just be prepared to jump in, but don't overthink. Thanks to the team who worked with me on this. Emily, Lara, You Love Words, and the recording studio, Laria Boutique. If you enjoy this podcast, please hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you just can't get enough, check out Her Voice, a sister podcast from The Choice, which aims to contribute to women's visibility in their domains of expertise.